better put him in the Heisman.
Got that award right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back, a College World Series title, the Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
Mason Jones had this to tweet out over the weekend. Decision coming soon, more lifeguard. And then he had the classic handshake emoji that so many people have kind of locked onto in the last couple of months. I'm thinking about his timeline, Tommy. When you see that and when you see soon, does that mean the next couple weeks, next month? Like, what is your thought when you initially see that about the decision of his future, whether he's going to declare for the NBA draft or if he's coming back for another year?
My first thought is, when will the deadline be? Because traditional deadlines and traditional dates don't mean a thing right now.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you make any decision on anything right now till the last possible moment? Because the information we have changes so rapidly right now in the world we find ourselves hopefully temporarily living in. So my first thought is, don't get in a rush there, big guy. You know, just wait until the last possible moment to make your call, or maybe keep that to yourself till the last possible moment, because who knows what's going to happen with the NBA draft, the timing of it, the resumption of their season. You know, a lot of these things like NFL draft, NBA draft, I guess they could go on and still not have the big show they normally have. They could just teleconference or whatever remotely. I'll be interested to see if and when those things go through and how they're done this year. So that's my first thought is, will there be a draft? And if so, when? And what would the deadlines look like for these players like Mason Jones to make a call?
So the deadlines that I think are pretty tentative right now are as followed. April 26th is the NBA early draft eligibility deadline, which is at 11:59. May 21 through the 24th is the NBA draft combine, which is in Chicago. June 15th is the NBA draft early entrant withdrawal deadline. And then June 25th is the NBA draft. But like you said, Tommy, those dates could change, and they could change quickly. And so you want to gather as much information as you can before you make a decision. And I say before, like as in Mason Jones, what he's thinking. And again, it doesn't matter what his family thinks. It doesn't matter what fans think. It doesn't matter what his close personal friends think. It is ultimately up to him and what he wants to do. Now, I think if he truly wants to be at his highest potential, if he wants to reach his highest ceiling at the NBA level, I think he is best served to come back another year. But my opinion does not matter when it comes to the decision. It's what he thinks and what he decides. And family, I think I skipped a family does have a major impact in his decision because of kind of his success in the basketball family that he's had with his sister, who's the all-time leader and assist at Texas A&M, and his brother Matt, who won the national championship for Duke in 2015. But I think that, again, he's got to make the decision,
yep,
and no one else does. Let's go to the phone lines. 877-377-6963 is the number to call or text in. Michael's in Little Rock. Michael, you're on the Morning Rush.
Hey, you guys. I got to know the last of that before the last commercial break. But Mason Jones, yeah, I agree. I think it's, you know, his decision, but I think especially, I think he might have said anyway, he has such a great relationship with Musk, but especially after what's been happening, you know, with the coronavirus and everything, coming back just seems kind of like, I think, the best situation. You know, if he was going to go, possibly, has he played the SEC tournament that had been finished, maybe we make the NCAA or the NIT, then that might make him maybe want to declare, possibly. But, I mean, because if you make the, you know, if you declare for the NBA draft, you walk up NBA teams in the summer, which obviously wouldn't happen now, because, so I would think he would come back, if for nothing else, because of what's happened. But that's just my opinion. I'll let you guys talk about that. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Michael. Yeah, I think the hunger for postseason success is a great point, because he's yet to have any at Arkansas. Didn't go last year, didn't go this year. And I don't really count the NIT. That's not postseason success for me. Postseason success is more you make a run in the NCAA tournament. And I know that's what many players crave, is being on the biggest stage, which is the NCAA tournament, and then eventually getting to a Final Four and showing out like well. Now, he has not had that chance. I don't know how much that burning desire is in him to have success in the NCAA tournament or to get Arkansas back to that point. I just don't know. I wish, like, Tommy, I wish we had this, like, major connection or we knew him personally where he was texting us and we could just say, sources say blah, 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 but we don't. And I don't know if there's a lot of people, when it comes to this timeline, when it comes to this decision, when it comes to what Mason Jones is going to do with his future, I would be very skeptical of people, regardless of how much you value them as journalists or TV or radio hosts, if someone definitively says, hey, I know this about this guy, I know this about something. I'm always very wary when it comes to these player conversations and you have these people that say, oh, I know what's about to happen, this is about to happen, blah, blah, blah. I'm kind of waiting until it actually does, especially when it comes. Now, coach, I'm a little, because it's easier to build a relationship with a coach, but when it comes to player, which is the age difference of so many of our media members and the players today, I'm a little distrusting when it comes to those type of sources, when it comes to a decision of a player in his future, either at Arkansas or the NBA level.
Yeah, I mean, and this could be, like I said, a fluid decision based on the rapidly changing world we live in. So I would hate for the deadline to come and go without Coach Musselman and his staff being able to spend any time with Mason discussing what's best for him. Not what's best for Arkansas, not what's best for Musselman, not what's best for this program. What is best for Mason Jones? Should be the only thing you worry yourself with here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of your trusted advisors, and I know they're biased to a degree because they have a stake in it, would be Eric Musselman. So right now your facilities are closed. You know, it's a time where coaches and players aren't spending time together. But who should be one of the most trusted advisors any of these players turn to at this point? Should be their college coach, right? And so I think all these deadlines, depending on how much longer this goes on, will all be pushed back.
Chaz in Fayetteville texting, he says, Mason Jones is probably going to sell while his stock is high. I'm assuming by sell you mean enter and declare for the NBA. Now, again, I don't know. Maybe you're judging something different, but who's to say that his stock can't get higher next year with the addition of some of these guys coming in, including the J.D. Note, Connor Vanover, and Baby Yola, who will be eligible for next season. Then you could say, oh, well, they'll have to develop chemistry. Maybe it won't be as flawless as some think. You can always go one way or another when it comes to this conversation. Randy and Van Buren text in, and he brings up a good point. Is there even going to be a draft? Now, we talked about the story from the AP last week that the MLB was discussing if they are even going to have a draft this upcoming season in June when it comes to drafting collegiate players. And that's, again, just a report. There's no facts or anything on that, but the same question I think needs to be asked of the NBA. This upcoming June, will there be a draft or will it be pushed back or postponed? How will they go about doing that? That's also a major factor because if you're Mason Jones, why would you declare if there's not even going to be an NBA draft?
Right, that's why I wonder about these deadlines. Now, the reason Major League Baseball is considering postponing or canceling the draft is because of the way years of service are counted as part of their collective bargaining agreement or their deal with the owners. And what if there's only 130 games? What if there's, you know, there's some marks within the agreement that would not count this year if there's not so many games? So that's part of this, is not bringing players in. That's part of baseball's thinking. The NBA may or may not have that same type of situation because they've played, what they play, 80-plus, I know 80-plus percent of their regular season because they were getting ready to go into the playoffs in April. So they played 75%, more than two-thirds. I don't know what the number is, but a high percentage of their season was behind them. Baseball had none of it. So that's the difference in maybe counting years of service. And we said, what does that matter? Well, it matters a lot to your pension, how you're qualifying for retirements, and long-term lifetime money that these players get in professional sports. So there's some of that that's also at stake when it comes to baseball that right now isn't part of the conversation for basketball.
877-377-6963 is the number to call or text. And just in case you're hopping on here for the first time, we're talking about Mason Jones' decision. He had a tweet out, decision coming soon, more life God. So he's obviously been contemplating his future at either in Fayetteville or at the next level. And I say next level, not just trying to go to the NBA or go through the G League, but maybe go overseas. But I think, Tommy, you brought this up last week. Who wants to go overseas right now?
Not me.
The corona seems to be more rampant and rapidly moving. Now, it's going about the United States, but I don't know if it's at the same rate that we've heard about some of these other countries. So that's something that I think ties into Mason's decision as well. I think Isaiah is a surefire NBA prospect. Now, which round? That's to be determined, but I think there's a little different category that these two fall into when it comes to determining what they want to do with their future.
You know, before I met my wife, she lived overseas and lived in Italy and lived in Germany and lived in some places, 20 years ago. You know, you go to college and you move away from home. And we'd heard a story last week about, I think Clay was telling about someone that went and got their kid from college in California. And they drove 2,000 miles. I don't remember who was telling us the story, but I remember us talking about this. Drove from the East Coast all the way out to California and back to move their kid home from college. You know, because they didn't want to get on an airplane. You know, it's one thing, and I think we're all reassessing some things. It's one thing to leave home and go to college, but you still got that in your back. I can always get in a car and drive home. You know, when you go to you go to play in Europe or you go play somewhere in the Middle East or one of these other places, who knows if they're even going to have these sports leagues over there when they're in China. Is China going to have professional basketball right out? I don't know. They're back to playing certain things right now in China. But South Korea. But it's just one thing. Maybe this is just the way I'm wired. Ty, it's one thing to be able to get in a car, no matter how far it is, and still drive home. It's a whole other thing when you can't drive across that ocean.
Yeah.
That's a whole different level of separation from everything you've ever known in your life, particularly at an age. I mean, Mason Jones is younger than you. Can you imagine living that far away from your family, particularly in uncertain times like these?
My buddy moved to China this past year. And so
how's he doing?
He's having
right
to
now?
Deal with that. I mean, he's still over there working and stuff, but there's been
you talk about a feeling of isolation and loneliness right now.
Yeah,
in these times.
Yeah, his family, obviously his mom and dad. His dad's in the military, so I think that's he kind of understand. His mom obviously loves him very much, and so I'm sure it's very hard on her. It's probably hard on him as well, but I would think it's probably harder on the mother than it is that. But he hasn't updated us if he's moving back anytime soon. He's taking this job.
You can't just get on a plane for the weekend and go home.
No, I agree. 100%.
I mean, it's just a whole different mindset. I just think times like these make you reevaluate some of those type of decisions you might make.
I've always held the belief that I'm never going to move out of the South. That's just, I told myself in college, I was like, I'm never going to live in a city outside of the Bible Belt, per se. And I think on, like, the addition of that, like, I know some people, like, I have a buddy that lives in Cali, I have a buddy that lives in Madison, I have buddies that live in New York, Washington, D.C., they're popped all over the place, and that's far enough. But, Tommy, as you mentioned, to be overseas right now with no, situation, I would think.
If you lived in New York City right now, you could at least have gotten on a plane and gotten home.
My roommate
recently, within a couple of hours.
Yeah, my roommate's sister did that. She's now going back home to El Dorado to work. So that's what she did, just because she didn't want to be in New York, is what he told me. Yeah. So I understand.
I'm just saying, you live a 9-hour plane ride. One thing to be a 9-hour car ride. It's mm-hmm. a whole other thing to be a 9-hour plane ride from home.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Or 12 hours or whatever it is.
So if Mason Jones does decide to come back for his final year on campus, I was thinking about this, and I think I mentioned this on the show before. Because of the football team in its current state, and because basketball just will never be as popular as either basketball or football, and I said baseball, not basketball, Mason Jones has the potential to be the most popular guy on campus next year, period. Like Felipe Franks, if this was a 10-win, 9-win football team, he would hold that category, and he would hold that position. But because of where the football team's going to finish next year, they're probably not going to go to a bowl game. 5-7, 4-8, we'll see what happens. If they go to a bowl game, maybe Franks overtakes Mace if he comes back. But Mace is the most popular kid on campus next year, period. Sports are over everything. As going to school at the University of Arkansas, I can tell you, pretty much like any other school, sports ride high. It's above everything. People know athletes, regardless if you're a fan of sports or not, they know who you are. Mason Jones would be the most popular kid on campus next year, period. Unless the football team goes to bowling.
Franks has a big year.
Correct. Right? But that's the only position that can overtake him. Now, I would think that would be alluring.
Are you factoring Isaiah Joe into that thought?
I think he's gone. And I think Isaiah's a little quieter. Mace has a little more of a personality that kind of makes him more, what's the word? I mean, popular, I guess. I don't know. But Isaiah, based on stuff I've seen in public, say he's quieter than Mason is. So I would think that Isaiah's probably gone. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But that has to attract him a little bit, right? Is that based on the personality, based on that you've seen the last couple of years?
Some people don't want popularity. I don't know. I mean, some people don't want the spotlight and the fame. It's not all it's cracked up to be, you know, not that we know, but just talking to people. I mean, spend some time around hearing some of the stories Tyler Wilson had to tell at one point. I mean, it's, you know, it sounds fun, you know, for fame and fortune and all that, but it has its issues that come along with it.
It has its drawbacks, and Tyler's more humble and likes to keep to himself and isn't kind of...
Just, it depends on who you are.
Yeah.
Whether you want to be the life of the party.
I also think it's how you, like, react to it and stuff. Now, obviously, we've had multiple conversations with Tyler on air and off air, and he is kind of, like you're saying, he likes to, for the most part, stay out of the spotlight. But there's parts of his life that I'm sure he's enjoyed... Sure. As the starting quarterback of the University of Arkansas, that he would never want to give up.
I totally agree. I'm just saying not everybody's wired that way.
Correct.
Not everybody was brought up in a way or has that personality that's not the reason you'd make the decision. Mm-hmm. It's a side benefit. It's secondary to the ultimate decision is what I'm saying.
No, I think you're right. And I think like you said, it varies on the person. Yeah. Some people enjoy it, some people don't.
So, Sean from Alma questioning, we're talking about Isaiah Joe as though he's gone. Well, that's an opinion. We think he's gone, or you think he's gone. Mm-hmm. I just wonder, with everything going on in the world right now, with the coronavirus and all of that, you know, as people spend more time with their families, away from school, do you start to reassess what's really important? You know, is it about getting away right now, or is it about having that extra, hey, come back and have an extra year and be close to family so that mom and dad can watch more and the family can be around? I mean, I think people are reassessing the value of family as we speak right now.
And I mentioned seeing Isaiah Joe in a gym with his family this past week. You don't get to do that if you're on an NBA team or you're playing in the G League or whatever the case may be, but there's still potential for you to do that playing basketball at Arkansas, because Fort Smith being 45 to an hour from Fayetteville, there's still that opportunity that you wouldn't have in the NBA.
Yep. Hey, is your home in Arkansas at least 10 years old and served by OG&E? They're offering a free weatherization program to increase your comfort and to lower the bills you have right now. We all need to do that. A trained crew will perform an energy audit at no cost to you and your family. Crews will install measures that could include attic insulation, LED light bulbs, weather stripping, power strips, smoke alarms, and a whole lot more. And again, this is a free program for you and your family. If you or someone you know could benefit from OG&E's free home weatherization program, call them today. They'd love to set that appointment for you. 1-800-272-9741. That's 1-800-272-9741 for OG&E's free home weatherization program.
So when it comes to Mason Jones' decision, one of the factors that I think is big when it comes to his choice is his NBA development. How much further can he get along with Eric Musselman to translate to the next level? That's what you have to ask yourself if you're Mason Jones. That's what you have to pitch to him if you're Eric Musselman. I think most of the factors that NBA scouts and GMs and everyone's looking at with Mace is his athleticism isn't what some of the other guys he'll face at the next level. And we've seen players over the years that athleticism hasn't been as big of an issue because they're so technically sound, they're so fundamentally sound in other areas that they make up for that, and they could still score and they could still defend and they did that. And he's got good instincts with his steal rate. Now, he's not a great on-ball defender just because he's not that quick, but he's great off the ball in deciding where he thinks it's going to go. That's why he gets a lot of off-the-man steals. And then his offense, he's got a great pump fake, he's got a great step back, he can get to the rack, he's got a little little shimmy step back. I always compare his game to Paul Pierce, not him individually to Paul Pierce, but they have similar types of games. But if he was to come back, I would think his biggest need of improvement, Tommy, would be to just continuously get quicker, continuously jump higher, get out more, like add weight, add good weight. I mean, that's what it's not his scoring, or it's not that he can't score. It's the elements surrounding just his body that I think the NBA teams are still questioning. The
durability?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just the, hey, can you do this against guys that are going to be way more athletic than you and way quicker than you? Now, you've shown you can do it at the collegiate level, but we know how big of a step jumping to the NBA is.
But every step he's taken in progression, and a lot of it's, you know, tied to what he's done with his body, but he's met the challenge, right?
Correct.
I mean, what challenge hasn't he met at this point? So, I mean, but that's betting on a lot, you know. And again, you got to be really sure when you're an NBA team getting perhaps just two draft choices.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you're a team that's traded away something. You got one this year. You know, so that's what goes on with these things. And that's why they look at every detail probably with more scrutiny in the NBA than maybe some other leagues just because of the lack of depth they have in their draft.
Mm-hmm. And so that's something that NBA teams, like, they don't take these draft picks lightly. They don't take these evaluations lightly. And again, the timeline of these, we've laid it out for you. The NBA early draft entry deadlines to the 26th, 21 through 24th is the combine. June 15th is the withdrawal form that you can do as an early draft entrant. And then the 25th is the draft. But those are all subject to change. And I think that just as we continue to update you and we continue to get updates from the league when it comes to this, that's going to factor in to not only Mason's decision, which we've been talking about the majority about this morning, but to Isaiah's as well.
Again, I think these deadlines are fluid because coaches haven't had a chance to talk with their kids in the normal process that you'd normally sit down, go over things. You and the staff were just, you know, obviously these programs are more or less shut down right now. And I don't think that they're going, and we'll just see, because the first deadline's what, April 25th?
26th, yeah.
26th, so we're a month out. You know, and until you hire an agent, and really, what's the process other than through FaceTime or some, you know, Skype, some kind of video conferencing? How much are people meeting with agents right now? Probably not much face-to-face meetings going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you're not really in a time where you can interview agents. So the hiring of the agent's the big deal. And if you don't do that, then obviously you've still got options. I don't think if you're fringe, if you're close, particularly with Mike Mason Jones, you don't close that door right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. But again, we mentioned it earlier, this decision is his and his alone to make. Now, he's going to be impacted probably by his family. He's going to be impacted by his friends. But I would hope that when it comes down to the final decision, the final straw, if you will, that he's the one making it and that he decides based on what he thinks is the best for his future.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
Oh, he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
You mentioned Eric Musselman in the video that Alan Brumman did with him jokingly kind of following what Musk was doing on social media. They put out this video of Eric Musselman remarking on the seniors. Here's what he had to say about those four.
You know, obviously, Jimmy, what you and Adria provided throughout the course of the year with all the minutes you guys are playing and the energy and you know, doing all the dirty work, defending, rebounding, blocking shots, deflections. I personally can't thank you enough, and neither can the staff. And then, you know, JC, you got to give him an incredible amount of respect. You know, he comes in here as a 1,000-point scorer, averaged 14 points a game last year. He has not received the minutes that he probably expected. It's certainly not the minutes that he wanted. But the one thing, JC, and this is more important than a guy that scores 80 or has 50 rebounds, is that you practice hard every day and your attitude was incredible. Incredible every single day, and that you can take with you for life. So we can't thank you enough. And Jamario, you joining the team when you did has had an incredible impact. Your voice on the bench, your practice habits, your liveliness of being appreciative of being a part of this thing, I can't thank you enough for that, too. So everybody's contributed a great deal.
So let's go over these individually, Clay. I want to start with Adriel Bailey. Here's a guy that had a fantastic end to his freshman campaign when they beat, or was it sophomore? Is he a freshman or sophomore? Freshman. When they took on North Carolina in that round of 32 game, and he played great. And then he kind of fizzled out a little bit. The sophomore and junior year comes back, has a really solid senior year, worked on his three-point shooting, ended up shooting 39% from the three-point line, and really in a number of different areas, Clay really improved his basketball game overall.
Yeah, Clay will reconnect.
Oh, he's reconnected. Sorry. Okay, so yeah, Tommy, so with Adriel, I mean, you really saw the improvement that he put in the offseason. I know Mason probably had the biggest vast of improvement, but Adriel, as far as he goes, he definitely put in the work, and it showed this past season.
Yeah, and you know, particularly with the transition that he's had to go through and meeting a new staff's expectations. I know you're a senior. If you're in Adriel's position and you've been around the block, you got the experience, but it's almost in some ways like being a freshman because you're starting over again. You've got to meet a whole new coaching staff's expectations, figure out what they're trying to do, and then fit into a new system as well, Ty. And that's not always easy when you've, to teach, what is it, teach an old dog new tricks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was able to do that despite really not having it. I mean, you look at his three-point percentage, didn't attempt one his freshman or sophomore year, went 2-12 from last year, and then ends up going 15-39, which calculates to 39%. And some of those threes he's able to hit were big time for Arkansas. And you think about how small this team was defensively, his block percentage, Tommy, was 80th in college basketball and 6th in the SEC. So despite Arkansas being vastly undersized, he was able to contribute on the defensive end and give Arkansas some spark and some energy in a position of need, especially when it comes to blocking shots.
Oh, he became one of the big three players on your team. You know, early December and January, Bailey was a guy that, he was probably the most improved player on this team at times. And I don't think there's any argument really about what Adriel Bailey's improvement and the jump he made, and was a guy that you really couldn't win without for a while. For a while was Jimmy Witt. I mean, you always had Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe when he's healthy. But then who was the third guy? And there was a good stretch of the season where it was Jimmy Witt, but there was also another good stretch of the season where it was Adriel Bailey. Mm-hmm. And some of that was based on matchup, but some of it was just based on Bailey's hard work.
Yeah, and he had a really good game on the road. It was either against Florida or Tennessee. I'm forgetting which one he really showed. I think it was Florida that he had one of his better games of the season, but he definitely showed out in spurts at time. And I think another one that stands out to me outside of Adriel's just overall game performances was the block he had against Valpo. The block he had against Valpo was incredible down there in North Little Rock in the arena with no teams, as Phil likes to call it. He was unbelievable in that that specific possession where he just goes and basically one-hands the ball when Valpo's best player, whose name doesn't ring a bell at the moment, but he snatched the ball and basically ended the game at that point. So I think, Clay, are you back with this, bud?
Yeah, and what I would say about Adriel, and you covered it well, Ty, and as you did too, Tommy, what he also brought was leadership. And you could see him when the team would come out of a timeout, he would have the last word. In other words, when Eric Musselman was through and they're out by their chairs, and he would whisper in the ears of different players, and you could see a smile come across their face. He had a way of relaxing the team and focusing them with just the right word. And the guys trusted him and believed in him. And so behind the scenes, I think he was a big part of what happened with this team. And the work ethic that he brings, the lunch pail type deal. And they're all like that in some ways, but none quite like Adriel and his low post defense and the ability to deny the ball and always be in the proper position and playing just the right technique in that defense. And you could see very seldom did the coaches correct him on the way he was positioning on the post. And that's almost an art form. But it's also really hard work. Give him a lot of credit for what he did this year to adapt to a new coaching style and a new system.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at his deflections. I know he was pretty good at getting steals as well. He led the team with 142 deflections this year, and HoopsHD.com named him the SEC Defensive Player of the Year. So He picked up a number of different accolades this season from his defensive performance. Moving on, Jimmy Witt is the next guy we'll touch on. Jimmy obviously started his career at the University of Arkansas, left for SMU, came back because his brother was a GA under Eric Musselman. His brother convinced him, hey, this guy knows what he's doing. He's a tremendous coach. You should come back here. Arkansas would not be where they are with their basketball team the 2019-20 season without Jimmy Witt, Clay.
Yeah, in his defense, and you know, you can't really point to any player and say they didn't play defense on this team, but his ability to take out the perimeter score of the teams, their best player, and do it night after night. And we focus on offense, and you can find some real highlights and some real incredible games where he got that little mid-range jumper going and got to the rim or got to the free throw line. And, you know, I think what we all remember about Jimmy this year is the first time we saw him shoot a free throw, we're like, uh-oh, this isn't going to be something you trust in the clutch. But yet it was. And he got better and better as the year went on from the free throw line, and where he was a reliable player. And in a lot of those comebacks, there are some big two for two where he got both ends of, you know, a one and one and just kept those rallies going. And sometimes they fell short, but it wasn't, you know, they wouldn't even have been in a position if it wasn't for, you know, some of the things Jimmy did for, you know, maybe a hot 5 minutes, both offensively and defense, to fuel those comebacks.
What do you think the future is for Jimmy? What level or where could he play beyond his time here at Arkansas?
Yeah, so I think that he definitely is going to get a shot. It might be, you know, as an undrafted free agent, and his ability to do exactly what the coach has asked is going to serve him well as far as getting his chance to play a little bit. It might be overseas, but he's going to play some basketball, and then I'll be stunned if he's not a coach, a Gennaro Pargo that you all at once look up in 10 years and 12 years like Gennaro is, and he's a coach in the NBA. You know, we had a Where Are They Now recently on Gennaro, and he was, you know, a student of the game, a gym rat that just soaked it all up and so smart in the game. And Jimmy's the same way. And I think that he's got a chance to be a part of the NBA for a while. So in some capacity, I don't, you know, may not be long as a player, but he can do a lot of things. And, you know, he just like a Patrick Beverley, I didn't see the role that he's developed into when he was in college, because I thought he was primarily just a scorer. But I already see that Jimmy can do some things like Patrick Beverley that will just be a thorn in your side defensively, and understand. He's taken these what I call NBA scouting reports from Musselman, and it looks like he knows that dude he's going to cover inside and out by the time he steps on the court. So he's got that going for him already, that he's going to soak up those scouting reports and then turn them into effective play.
Brought to you by World of Wireless, 877-305-DISH. You can call WOW now, lock in your price for 2 years. Hey, we're all looking to cut some corners and save some money. DISH can help you do that. So if you've got a cable bill, a current satellite plan that's out of contract, it's time to call WOW now and lock in your price for 2 years, three TVs in the house, less than $75 a month right now. That includes whole home DVR, HD in every room, local installation, and they'll take care of everything, plus give you a $100 Visa gift card. Call WOW now. Get the process started and two-year price guarantee, 877-305-DISH.
One of the cool things about Jimmy Witt this year, and this is via Hog Stats from McGuard, since the three-point line was implemented, he had the highest point total Arkansas record-wise without a three-point attempt. So I thought that was pretty cool. Clay, it's kind of a bummer, though. I know he was invited to that 2020 Portsmouth Invitational Tournament, which is like a pre-NBA draft camp. That's been canceled. I would like to see what he could do there with other NBA potentials in that camp.
Yeah, he's got some things that will work out, because he's got length. I mean, he's 6'5". He does have the mid-range, and I mean, that there's not very many college players that have the mid-range anymore and understands how to get to the rim. the without question, and this is something that to watch going forward, but these players are so plugged in to what you do in the NBA as far as scouting reports, terminology, and everything, and it will make it easier for a team to take a Jimmy Witt and know that he's going to be a glue guy that, that fits in their system because he understands what they're doing. A lot of these teams are using the same language that, that Eric Musselman uses with his team, and it and it's, you know, we heard about it because it he it's a recruiting plus. Well, it's also a plus going forward for Arkansas players to plug into the NBA. So yeah, I think he's got a chance, guys, and you know, we all know Mason and Isaiah are the two that the NBA guys are talking about the most, but you know, all you need is a roster spot, and you don't have to be drafted to have a roster spot. When he gets in a practice at an NBA camp, he's gonna shine, I think.
I hope he does too. So you mentioned kind of the recruiting tool, and I think to tie off the senior segment with Bell, with Jamario Bell and G. Talasella. G. Talasella, you really were kind of disappointed with his production this year from the 3-point line. You thought he'd be that stretch four. He did not ended up being that guy. And I think with Bell, he just seemed like he wanted to be a Razorback and continue to play basketball. He was pretty good at, I think, Clay, was it Junction City that he played at in high school? I think is where he played, if I remember that correctly.
He played at Junction City, played football and basketball. I think they won state championships maybe in both during his time. I think what he gave this team is defense and practice more than anything else. Mm-hmm. Another athletic big guy that could lean on people and challenge Adriel Bailey and at that position, not so much for playing time, but just to make his practice time miserable because he did, you know, he was, while he was doing all that, he was getting ready for the combine, and he tested pretty good, and you saw what his numbers, both his standing broad jump, his vertical, the shuttle run, the cone run, all those things were really good, and that's what everybody always said about him. He didn't stay healthy at the end of his career when he finally started to transition from really a basketball player to being a football player. You know, it's too bad maybe we didn't see him on the basketball court 2 or 3 years earlier because he was somebody that had the athletic ability to play in the SEC both as a defensive end and as maybe a 3 or 4 man, you know, on the basketball court.
Yeah, he broke a goal in high school, if I remember that correctly, right?
I think he just jerked it down.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the backboard is what I think he broke.
Yeah.
He and Corliss have that in common. It's great Arkansas high school players that tore up a high school gym.
Yeah, those are you'll see those very often. Hot Take Monday brought to you by Crabtree RV, exit 13 off of I-40, next door to the Cracker Barrel in Alma, celebrating their 70th anniversary this year. Lots of great local trade-ins. First-class parts and service department, 26,000-square-foot indoor showroom, and a great staff to take care of you. You'll find it all at Crabtree RV in Alma. Again, exit 13 off of I-40. Crabtree RV, it's where your family's dreams come true.
We got Mark Keshisher, who does play-by-play for both college basketball, the NBA, and other sports, coming up at the 8 o'clock hour. Want to touch on some of the games that were played on CBS this week and some old NCAA tournament championships we'll get into with Clay and Tommy coming up. But Clay, you referenced the recruiting aspect just a little while ago. This is one of the clips that Jenkins pulled for me this morning on social media, and that Arkansas is really excelling because we've seen these videos that Eric Musselman's put out. Here is one of the reasons why he said they do that.
You know, if you can get your program, I don't know what date it was, to get on SportsCenter and to get on all ESPN's social media things, and Arkansas basketball's on there, that carries tremendous value for our program with recruits. And also your fans are engaged and people in Arkansas are talking about, hey, did you see that video? And so it's a good thing to have fun. Yeah, I'm vulnerable, no question. When I put something out like that, you know, my wife, like, she can be embarrassed by stuff. My daughter can be embarrassed by stuff. And people are going to say stuff, you know what I mean? You're not going to please everybody. Everybody's not running around saying, hey, those videos are great. There's people that are going to, you know, have their own opinion, but what I'm worried about is how do I put Arkansas basketball in the best light with recruiting and our fan base and our student body on campus? And that's really the biggest concern that I have and we have as a staff.
Clay, I know that SportsCenter put out the video of Muss in the empty gym. And you think about in a time period like this where really nothing's going on in the world of sports, and if you do something that catches waves, then you can stand out amongst the rest. And I think Arkansas basketball with Eric Muss, not only during the season with the different recruit pictures, the different things he was able to do, but especially right now, even in a dead period, that he has been able to go about that in a number of different ways and attract attention.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, he's got to find other ways to keep it creative and go about this process, but none of this was just because, you know, everybody thought, well, he's just so bored, he's doing that. Well, there's a plan. There was a reason. These were all measured. I'm sure a lot of them were done in the same day.
Calculated, yeah.
Yeah, it's all calculated, so you could put them out over a series of time. But absolutely, Musselman gets it. And I think part of it is, Ty, he is surrounded by 20-somethings, you know, on his staff from Root to Riley Hall to several of these young guys.
His son, Michael. Muss Jr.
And I think they're great sounding boards, but they've told you and they've made the statements that here he is, probably the ringleader in all the ideas behind these, the creative ideas. So Muss gets it and knows, because he knows what the impact of it is. He knows what the dividend is for doing it. And let me just say, as a father of a 10 and a 8-year-old, if you could do something to embarrass your children, that's just a bonus, right? So if you can do a video that embarrasses your kids, and that's just like extra gravy, you know.
With this, and I'm forgetting the middle son's name, but obviously Mariah is his daughter, Mrs. Danielle is his wife, and then Michael, who's on his staff, is up there. And I'm forgetting the name of his other son, but I would say that also ties into everything. And I think with him, like he's gotten past the point where, hey, this will be a little cheesy, a little embarrassing, because it's drawing attention, and I think people really gravitate towards that. And I think Kim English, who's the assistant coach, former Missouri basketball player, who's the assistant for Tennessee, who basically should have just tagged Muss in this, don't focus on social media, blah, 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 and it was like completely an indirect shot at Eric Musselman. I think for the time being, right now, you have an opportunity, and Eric Musselman has really capitalized on that opportunity to continue to draw attention to your basketball program. Now, you've heard the phrase, all publicity is good publicity. I don't necessarily agree with that, but what he's doing right now, I would venture to say, is a good thing for the Arkansas basketball program, because you're getting attention despite this being a difficult time for sports and everything else going on. And yet he is still being able to draw that in, which is a big thing, a major thing. So I think that's something important that we can talk about moving forward.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a light and flavorful beer for those easy drinking occasions.
The crowd's into it. They just threw him out of the game. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
Let's go to Mark Keshisher right now, ESPN Radio, for in the NBA, also college football and college basketball. Mark, thank you for making some time for us this morning, man. We really appreciate it.
Gentlemen, good morning. Appreciate that you guys get after it every day. I feel a little rudderless these last few weeks, not having any games or prepping for any games. It's a weird place to be after 30 years in this business.
So, Mark, you mentioned that. I want to start there. We are obviously still doing our radio show. Now, we've had plenty of content these last couple of days because I don't think it's really set in yet, and there's still a lot of sports news. But for you as an individual who does play-by-play, how are you spending your time with no really work to go around as of late?
Yeah, it's strange because, you know, you feel like it's easier to take this one day at a time than to look at the potentially massive amount of time before we get back into games. And so I left Kansas City, where I was supposed to do the Big 12 tournament. That was 10 days ago. And there have been a whole bunch of home projects that have been on my list for like a year that I've been ignoring, because my schedule rolls one season into the next, and there's never really any downtime. So I've kind of attacked that. I've enjoyed my daughter, who's a college senior, who's now home, you know, to finish out her career. They're going online schooling like most college kids and school children across the country, and So I've enjoyed family. I've enjoyed, you know, listening to old ball games or watching ESPN The Ocho for a little laugh here and there. But I think it's at some point going to set in for me and for maybe, you know, for most folk in any job that they do that, you know, if they're out of work right now, is that it's I mean, the new normal is going to be hard to adjust to, because when I look at the amount of time it could be, if we're talking mid-June or if we're talking July 1, that's a long time from now.
So with the NBA season, I know that Adam Silver and the owners, they want to still continue at some point this season. So I'll pose this question to you, Mark. Do you think the NBA season will pick back up in 2020?
You know, maybe because I'm such an optimist, I keep saying yes. I keep hoping that, you know, after due time and when it's time and safe for all of us and for, you know, for basketball teams and hopefully for fans to gather in, you know, in an arena, that, you know, we will get to that point at some point. I think, you know, the league looking at July arena availability, August arena availability, the potential of maybe staggering into next season where you could open, say, on Christmas Day, so your calendar isn't as bunched in the fall as it would be with a, you know, late August or early September finish. And I think at some point we have to go against convention anyway. You know, the old adage is don't go up against college football, NFL, right? You don't want to put your product against any of those two properties in September or potentially October. But, you know, we're going to have a Kentucky Derby run in September. There's going to be Grand Slam tennis in September, theoretically, of course, all of this. And maybe maybe this pushes into the late summer and into the early fall instead of completely, you know, losing the rest of your season, most notably the postseason. So I continue to be optimistic, but it's, you know, I listen for Adam Silver the times when he comes out to speak, and obviously we all follow Woj, our colleague at work, because he has such a huge wealth of information at his fingertips to find out if that's really going to be a reality at some point.
Mark Kestisher, voice of play-by-play in many sports on ESPN Radio, with us here on the Morning Rush. What do you think the long-term effect, or at least this next season, whenever we get back to games, what is the effect on college football that, for the most part, missed all of its spring practice, will miss its spring games? For some schools, it may be August, and for many schools, August before they get back on a practice field together as a team. What do you think the effect is on college football because of the shutdown?
Yeah, college football specifically, and you know what? I will lump it in with the pros as well, because who knows when they're going to, you know, be able to get together and have any kind of regular preseason, and I guess I could lump it into all sports. I think it's going to be, I don't know if sloppy is the right word, but it's going to take a while to get into a gear where we maybe mentally look at it and say, okay, here's what we're used to. Here's where we could be at this time. Had we had the normal calendar year and lead up spring football and into summer camp and all that, it's too much to ask. And I guess we could even go into the Olympic model as well, which is really top of mind now with the headlines of today and looking at Olympic athletes and the realization that even, you know, if they say, okay, we can go to Japan and have this event right now, these athletes in our country and countries all across the world, I mean, no one's able to really do anything. You can practice in a home gym or around your house, but it's not the same. And the same could be said for college football as well, is that just the lack of being able to do anything constructively as a team hour after hour, whatever the NCAA limits may be, is definitely going to take an effect on the play that we'll see when and if we get going.
Mark, there's thoughts out there and opinions that, hey, when sports return, it's going to be the most coveted, watched, well-attended events that we've ever seen in sports. But do you think that's necessarily an absolute, considering the economic downturn we've seen in this country and the world going into recession? Will people be able to make those choices based on the economy we're all going to be facing?
That's a great point. When you look at it financially and even mentally, I mean, we're in, for me, day 10, you know, at least a week into this, and now extrapolate that forward, and there's also going to be, you know, are people going to want to go out and be in big crowds initially? And, you know, there's unfortunately a fear associated with this now you know, as we can't see it go from person to person theoretically. So I think mentally, I think in the pocketbook, certainly we could see it reflected at the gates. But I think from a television standpoint, and me personally as a radio person, I would hope that, you know, from a listening standpoint, just the to have a ball game on TV or have it on radio, I know for me, and probably for most of your listeners too, would be so therapeutic right now. We'd love to have that while we're all kind of self-quarantining. But I think it's going to be huge. I don't know what it'll look like in the stands, although I predict most people are going to want to get back to normalcy if they can, if they have the cash available. But I know from a television standpoint, from a broadcast standpoint, it's going to be huge, especially in my house.
Well, we've always turned to sports for that rebound, that therapy, as you said. After 9/11, sports is what got our minds away from the terrorist attack and the tragedy. After hurricanes hit our coastlines, you know, so many other natural disasters, even, you know, wartime type disasters. Sports is what we've always kind of turned to get back to a sense of normalcy for all of us. This is the first time in our lives since, I guess, the World War II era, we didn't have sports for this an extended amount of time.
Oh, absolutely. And thank goodness for the internet, right? And the ability to stream shows that I'd only heard about. All my relatives talk about all the great stuff they've been watching, and I'm probably expiring that account pretty fast as well. Classic games that are on television, fun to watch and look back, you know, 20, 25 years ago, if not, you know, for the competition, certainly not having a score bug at all times to know time and score or you know, changes in the game itself when you look at how games are played now versus how they're officiated now. For me, I had to unfortunately move my daughter's belongings out of her dorm yesterday because, you know, college campuses are closed down. And so on my ride home for about an hour, I heard an NBA Finals that I was a very small part of as a studio host, but it was from 10 years ago. And even though I knew the outcome of the game, it was just fun to hear two of the three voices on that broadcast have since died, and so to hear them at their peak in a medium that they were so good at, that was a little therapy for me as well.
And that NBA Finals you're referring to was the Los Angeles Lakers against Boston Celtics,
right?
Seven-game series, and you think about the impact of Kendrick Perkins' injury, which Boston just got housed on the glass in Game 7, and just that series overall really supplanting Kobe Bryant's legacy, the late Kobe Bryant. It was a fantastic series, so I can see why you were so immersed in that, especially being on it at one point.
Yeah, I think it was like middle of the third quarter, early third quarter, and I heard Jim Durham, the late Jim Durham, mention the Celtics were leading 49-37 or something. I remembered how difficult it was to score in that ball game. I was sitting in the stands at Staples Center for that game, but I had forgotten just how poorly and certainly how poorly Kobe had shot up until a certain point of the game. But to hear Jim Durham's voice, and as a guy who grew up listening to radio play-by-play, and I have stolen so much stuff from JD that I forgot how much stuff I stole just listening to him call that game yesterday, and Dr. Jack Ramsey, who I was very fortunate to get to know for many years as studio host, and then we even did a few games together. Just to hear his voice again and to hear how he described the game was so much fun. And Hubie Brown was on that broadcast as well, who I get to partner with in the summertime during the finals. So a lot of fun driving home yesterday.
So, Mark, if you could pick the sport, the teams, and the venue for your return game behind the microphone, if you got to decide where you go and who you get to call and what sport it is, what would be the assignment you would choose when all of this gets going again?
Such a loaded question, but a great question. I probably would have to go NBA because it's always been my broadcast love. I want these teams to be in tip-top shape, but I'd love a Lakers-Bucks or a Clippers-Bucks, who seem to be the three top teams right now, in either venue. I mean, we've been going to Los Angeles a lot the last few years. Milwaukee has turned out to be a really good NBA city with a really good team right now. So if guys were in shape and ready to go, I would love that matchup. Selfishly, I grew up more of a baseball fan, and even though I'm probably ninth on the ESPN radio play-by-play baseball depth chart, you know, any matchup at, you know, Yankee Stadium or Fenway Park or Dodger Stadium or Wrigley Field. You know, if I was fortunate enough to get one of those calls, that would be awesome as well.
We're speaking with Mark Kesish here on the Morning Rush ESPN play-by-play. Mark, let me top off the interview with this, man. You mentioned that 2010 finals game. One of the guys in that game was Meta World Peace. And I was sitting next to Rick Kamla at SEC Media Days 2 years ago. And I asked Rick, I was like, Rick, of all the NBA guys you've interviewed who does work for NBA TV, which one stands out to you the most? And he said, Meta World Peace. And he said he talked to him for like 30 minutes, and it was like the most incredible interview he's ever had. Now, getting to do this, you get to interview a number of former players, a number of current players, and a number of big-time sports greats. Mark, of all the interviews you've done over the years, which stands out to you the most?
Good question. And interesting, because I did hear Ron Artest mentioned time after time, and I had to go back in my memory bank. I'm like, when did he become Meta World Peace? Clearly it was after that 2010 finals that I was listening to yesterday. We don't get as much of a chance to interview LeBron James as we used to back when he was younger. I think I've only interviewed him twice in the last 3 years. So when I do get to interview him, as I did in Chicago this past year for All-Star Game, it's always a fresh batch of questions, whatever's topical in maybe a year, you know, the last year leading up to it, I can talk to him about, and I think he's been pretty forthcoming with me. So that would be one of them there. The Golden State Warriors are always very outgoing with their interview subjects. You know, Steph Curry will talk with us quite a bit. I think he's very open and honest, and I'd say the same for his head coach, Steve Kerr, as well. So it's hard for me to pin it on one. I'd love to give you one that was very mysterious and tough to crack, but I find most of my interviews are short form, 2 to 3 minutes, and so I don't get into that great depth. But if it's a superstar athlete who doesn't speak to me that often or speak to us that often, I can usually get into a little better subject matter, so I'd probably go with LeBron.
Awesome. Well, Mark, we really appreciate your time. Mark Kesicher, ESPN play-by-play for a number of different sports. Thanks for making some time for us, and hopefully these games get picked up so you could start working again, man.
I hope so, and hope some games get going so you guys can churn out great stuff, and just keep it up and keep us going until we get some games going.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, Mark.
Thank you.
That is Mark Kesicher, play-by-play for ESPN on ESPN Radio.
Brought to you by Burton Pools and Spas. They're still having a big spa sale, even though the Northwest Arkansas Outdoor Expo has been postponed. Burton Pools and Spas is still honoring all the rebates on hot spring spas, even the 0% financing offer for up to 36 months. So if you're in the market right now thinking about completing those backyard projects, let Burton Pools and Spas help you with that. $3,000 rebates, up to 36 months of no-interest financing, and spas starting at just $26.95 right now at Burton Pools and Spas. Call, go to their Facebook page, or check them out online at burtonpools.com. They'll even do a FaceTime with you. So if you don't want to come into the store, they certainly understand that right now. They can even FaceTime with you to go over all of the details at Burton Pools and Spas. Get the spa of your choice for Burton Pools and Spas in Springdale and in Fort Smith. Burton Pools and Spas is your source for backyard fun.
So let's bring back in Clay Henry. And Clay, Mark is actually just re-upped with ESPN. So if and for those of our listeners that have heard his voice, he's done the NBA Finals, college football playoff. I mean, he's done a multitude of different things. And I the question I posed to him talking about just his favorite interview over the years, LeBron James. And I kind of found that funny, Clay, because I know Dudley's experience with LeBron, it doesn't seem to be the same that Mark's had with him.
Yeah, I will tell you, this is not my LeBron story, but it's my wife, and she was a PE teacher at Kirksey Middle School years ago. And LeBron, early in his career, was brought in by Walmart to do a clinic at a school in Bentonville. And PE teachers were invited to join in, and so she got to go. And LeBron, with his entourage, walks out, dribbles a basketball, spins it on his finger, says hello to the kids. Hey, this is how you shoot a dunk. And he jumped up and dunked it, waved and said, see ya. Walked out the door, got in his car, and they took him to the airport. He got his check. That he was whatever his Walmart vendor had promised that he would do a clinic, you know, in Bentonville. He did a clinic, boys. Did a clinic. So, you know, it's, when you hear stories like that, it kind of tarnishes the man. And, you know, I doubt he's like that now. But at that point, he was just collecting checks. And it was so sad. And I'm sure there were, you know, 1,000 kids or 500 kids there that were like, what just happened? What was that? Why were we here? Who was that? Why did he do that? You know, and it's just like no autographs, no nothing. And so when I hear something like that about LeBron James, and I think he's way beyond that, and that it just kind of tarnishes the whole image of what a superstar is or what he should be. And we may be about out of time on this segment, but I'd like for you guys to ask my favorite interview and why it is and how much different the legacy of this man is than say, a LeBron James.
And Dudley's...
I've got some good stories.
We'll touch on that next segment because I want to give you as much time as possible, Clay, to go into that. And Dudley's story, what he's told me and so many others, is when he was at, an AAU basketball tournament when LeBron was younger. LeBron looks over at him, and I think Dudley's covering the event, and he asks, hey, Dudley, or he didn't say his name, but he's like, hey, can you go get me a Gatorade? Dudley's just like, look around. He's like, no, like, I'm not just going to, like, just go yeah. get your Gatorade. Which
not
I,
doing
like,
it.
Yeah, it's like the first time he told me that, I think he told me and neighbors that one time, and I was just cracking up laughing. I thought that was great. So, it's stories you hear, man. It's some are good, some are bad. That one, Mark seems to be.
Man, I've asked him to get me a Gatorade before, and he wouldn't do it either. So, I mean, maybe this is on Dudley.
Well, boys, if I ask you to give me something to drink, it won't be a Gatorade, all right? I promise you that.
8:19 in the morning. Fair.
Thank you. You'll need something that can also be a hand sanitizer, right?
It might have a little more octane to it.
Hand sanitizer and whiskey, right?
Yes. Gatorade.
I think so.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade with half the sugar and carbs of Mike's Hard.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time, we're coming for the whole damn thing.
Go ahead, man. What was the best interview that you've ever had that you wanted to bring up?
Yeah, and it was something that I didn't see that was going to happen. It was with Arnold Palmer, the King. And kind of prepped this... I grew up at Old Riverdale Country Club. My uncle Bill was the pro, and I grew up in his shop. And, of course, that was in the mid-60s when Arnold was king and winning Masters and U.S. Opens, never won the PGA, which kind of sets up the background for this story. But I was covering the 88 PGA at Oaktree in Edmond. I was the golf writer at the Tulsa World. And I had covered so many golf tournaments at Oaktree. They would play state championships, women's and men's. They have three courses there, so they're always hosting an event that I would have to cover and be there for 4 days. And Hugh Edgman was president of Oaktree and one of the legends in that landmark, you know, business. All the, you know, PGA West, La Quinta, all those great courses that are still fantastic. Palmer had never won the PGA, and he was in the twilight of his career, was not going to be competitive in that tournament, but he was given an exemption, as the PGA always did with Arnold. And so he has his own private jet, did not play a practice round, flew in on Wednesday night to, you know, after dark. He's building a course somewhere. He's busy. He's not playing a lot of golf. And but there was a buzz in the media room Thursday morning that he was on the property. And, you know, it's like 7:30 in the morning, and Hugh comes over and sits down with me. Hugh Edgman, he's like, Clay, he just kind of whispers. He says, you want to interview Mr. Palmer? So he's got about 10 minutes before he's going to the practice range to warm up, and would you like to interview him? Like, I just about knocked him down jumping up, and he took me in there, and I introduced myself, and then Hugh kind of stood back to the side. And I said, Mr. Palmer, and he goes, no, it's Arnie. Call me Arnie, Clay. And so, you know, I asked a couple of more questions, and then I said, Mr. Palmer, and he reached out and touched my arm. He says, if you say Mr. Palmer one more time, this interview is over. He says, you're Clay, I'm Arnie. And so we went on, and I finally had the guts to say Arnie. And then, you know, it's 5 minutes, and Hugh says, Mr. Palmer, we can get you a roped-off area to get you to the warm-up area where you can hit a few balls. And he says, no, I'm going to spend a little more time with Clay. And then it was, you know, the interview went on. And finally he says, Mr. Palmer, we've got to get you to the first tee. And we've got – and it's really a short walk from the locker room to the first tee at Oak Tree, you know, maybe 30 yards, 40 yards. And says, you know, it's just a mass of people. Of course, everybody knew he's going to come out and go right down there. And there's going to be autographs to be signed. And Hugh says, we can fix it where you can just, you know, get straight to the tee. And he says, you can rope it off, but I'm going to sign autographs. So we're walking down the hill, and he signs the first two. And Hugh is like, you need to come on. And he says, no, I'm going to sign autographs. And I said, Mr. Palmer. And he looked at me again, you know, and he says, what? Mr. Henry. Which told me he remembered my last name. And I said, how many are you going to sign? He said, I'm going to sign them all. That's why they came here. That's why I came here. So I'm not going to win the tournament, but I can sign autographs. And so then we get to the first tee, and I decided then to read, you know, I've got a media pass. I can walk inside the ropes for the whole round. And I decided I'd revamped everything that I'd planned to do, and I'm going to ride on Arnold for the whole day. So I'm going to walk the course inside the ropes. And he tees off, and he starts down the fairway, and there's a little boy that somehow is like a little 10-year-old boy. Somehow he's on the first tee, and he's screaming and crying. And Arnold walks over there and grabs his hand and says, you just come with me. And they went right down the middle of the fairway, and they got almost to the green, and then you could hear a mother holler, and the little boy ran to his mother. And we got to the next tee, and he walks over. We're having to wait, and he walks over to me. I was like, that was pretty cool. And he says, oh, I've done that 1,000 times. He says, the mamas always find me. Then they find their son. So that's my Arnold Palmer, and I've got more. But that was just the most incredible day. And he's the legend, the king, and he was like that every time, I'm told. It's not – that wasn't just, okay, he connected with me. He connected with everybody. I mean, every interview he did was like that, and it was the most incredible day that I've ever spent, guys.
Yeah. He was certainly probably the most personable, connectable – I'm not using all the right words. He connected with the people probably better than any other megastar we've ever seen in sports. I don't think there's any question about it.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.